This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Enterprise BizBytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Christine Wong.
We're going to be with you up until around 1 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch with our show today, get us via WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio. Now, an organization's environmental, social, and governance (ESG) practices provide a vital metric for when investors. For where investors should park their funds, according to RHB research. So how are Malaysian businesses approaching sustainability, and how does this affect their bottom line, Chris?
Right. So in RHB Research's report, they said that, quote, the COVID-19 pandemic has taught investors that no matter how foreseeable a risk may be, the impact an event has on society and businesses hinges on the ability to plan for significant disruptions and changes in the operating environment. ESG issues have, therefore, leapt even more to the forefront as a signpost of a resilient business. The report added that many institutional investors are now building ESG portfolios and forming their own in-house ESG methodologies.
And while corporate Malaysia has made some progress on the governance front, the environmental and social elements have impacted stock prices the most. The plantations, oil and gas, and energy sectors have come under the environmental spotlight in recent years. More recently, shortfalls in the social pillar have been detrimental to EMS, gloves, and plantation companies, not just from a share performance perspective, but has involved the affected company losing sizable and material contracts, in addition to damage to management's reputation.
Yes, but what is the social pillar? Now, according to the report, social pillar issues have typically involved matters concerning the treatment of their workforce and migrant workers in particular. Unfortunately, the domestic labour shortages and high reliance on large numbers of relatively low-skilled workers by many economically important sectors makes the social pillar a minefield for the affected corporations. Now, the report also mentions that the government may ultimately have to step in to implement a holistic and comprehensive reform of migrant worker supply, from sourcing to housing, remuneration, working hours, overtime and repatriation, etc.
Right. And in the longer term, to minimise dependence on manual labour, Malaysia needs to move further up the value chain to increase participation in higher tech industries involving the use of more automation and robotics. Accordingly, investors need to perform stringent screening to avoid companies that may present ESG risks, RHB research have added. So, how can Malaysian businesses navigate the space of ESG and sustainability? We'll be getting in touch with the Executive Director at the Business Council for Sustainable Development Malaysia, Roberto Benatello, after these messages. You're tuned in to Enterprise BizBytes here on BFM 89.9.
Stay tuned to Enterprise BizBytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Be free, Malaysia. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Enterprise BizBytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. I'm Rich Bradbury, and I'm in the studio with
Christine Wong.
Again, we're going to be with you for about another 45 minutes. If you want to get in touch, get us via WhatsApp 018-789-8899, Twitter or Instagram, we're at BFM Radio. Now, we're talking about how an organization's environmental, social, and governance practices provide a vital metric for where investors should park their funds. Excuse me, I just had to sneeze. Mm-hmm. According to RHB research, so how are Malaysian businesses approaching sustainability, and how does this affect their bottom line? If you're only just joining us, we said we've got a guest coming up here on the session. We do have Roberto Benatello. He's the Executive Director at Business Council for the Sustainable Development of Malaysia. He's with us right now. Roberto, how can we start by telling us about the Business Council for Sustainable Development, BCSD, here in Malaysia?
So BCSD Malaysia stands for Business Council for Sustainable Development Malaysia. We are an association, basically, set up in Malaysia. The legal entity is a company limited by guarantee, and basically we help companies to become more sustainable. We convene members, so we are a membership organization, and stakeholders from the business community here in Malaysia, and in a kind of safe and pre-competitive space. So here they can collaborate, they can talk to each other, they can develop tools, they can also develop methodologies and share practice. But it is also a space where we provide education, we provide capacity building. And the ultimate mission is to accelerate the transition to a more sustainable world by facilitating or helping or assisting companies in implementing better sustainability strategies, okay, or better sustainability practices. We also want to stress the fact that we want to make a more sustainable business more successful. It's important to stress that. And it's important to create the link between the sustainability performance of a company. I'm sure you're familiar with the term ESG. So between the ESG performance of a company and the financial performance and the financial success and the resilience of a company. Before, there was not much strong evidence of this link. And now this evidence is absolutely available, and the link is there. You know, if a company performs well in sustainability, that company is more successful, more resilient. That company can attract better investment. It can attract better and more employees, people wanting to work for that particular company, and more customers as well, because there are more and more customers that want to buy products that are that come from a company that is a sustainable company, that a company that produces and sources, for example, its raw materials in a sustainable way. So we work around six main areas. So it's a pretty holistic approach to sustainability. We do not take care of just one single area, but you know, it's sustainability at 360 degrees. And the areas that we cover include, for example, circular economy, cities and mobility, climate and energy, food, nature, and social issues, for example, human rights. And last but not least, extremely important, reporting and governance. So that's pretty much what we do.
All right. So from our understanding, the World Business Council for Sustainable Development came up with Vision 2050, which is a framework for action in the decade ahead and designed to help companies drive change in their sustainability planning and business. So can you elaborate on that?
Let me start by telling you a little bit about our affiliation with the World Business Council for Sustainable Development, WBCSD. It's probably the leading corporate sustainability association organization worldwide, and they've been around for 27 years, and some of the members are the largest corporations worldwide. I think altogether they employ something like 19 million people, and they have a combined revenue of $8.5 trillion. But anyway, so we are one of their global partners around the world. There are 62 of them, and BCSD Malaysia is affiliated, is a global network partner of WBCSD. And they are a huge knowledge powerhouse. They were very happy, and we're very honored to be part of that network, because we can actually utilize the knowledge and expertise and bring that to bear here in Malaysia and share that with the Malaysian business community. So WBCSD, over the years, they've come up with real landmark work, pieces of work that have really become so important. For example, the Greenhouse Gas Protocol. It's a protocol that every company around the world uses to work out their greenhouse gas emissions, for example. So one other big project from WBCSD is called Vision 2050. And they started 10 years ago with this project, with elaborating this vision. It's the vision of, how the world should look like by 2050. What should happen? What would be the vision for a world by 2050? And last year, they actually revamped this vision, because over the last 10 years, a lot of things have changed, and also COVID being one of them. But basically, the vision is for, 9.7, 10 billion people, which is the projected population, world population by 2050. So the vision is to have these people to be able to live well and within the planetary boundaries by mid-century. And, this sounds like an easy, simple statement, but it's very, very challenging. And in order to get there, we need to overcome some big, big problems, okay? So there are basically three pressing global challenges, and they are the climate emergency, and it's a real emergency, the loss of nature and biodiversity, and unfortunately growing inequality. So Vision 2050 is basically a framework that has been developed to identify the big transformations that need to happen, okay, and quite quickly, for this vision to be realized. 9.7 billion people to be able to live well and within the planetary boundaries. So what are the big challenges that we have ahead of us? For example, the energy sector, the energy needs to be totally decarbonized and quickly, because the energy sector basically produces quite a lot of CO2. So that needs to be, that needs to transition to green electricity, to green energy. Another area is the areas of materials. Materials need to go circular, so we need to be able to introduce circular economy. And in order to do that, it's not just a one company job. We need to put together a lot of companies with a lot of entities, stakeholders, governments, and we need to create ecosystems that are able to make a circular economy really, really work. Another example is the food system. Food needs to be produced sustainably and equitably as well. And, the food system need to provide healthy diets for people all over the world. Another big challenge is in the transportation system. The transportation system need to change. For example, infrastructure to support electric vehicles need to be built quickly and at scale. So these are the kind of things that that are not happening fast enough, and that they need to happen. At the base of these profound transformations, there are also fundamental mindset shifts. Okay, the most important of which is the let's say the reinvention of capitalism. We need to move from shareholders to stakeholders type of capitalism. The financial performance alone is not enough. Business must create real value, not just for the shareholders, but for the stakeholders, for a wider audience. And business need to reorientate more to medium to long term horizons. Okay, so that is really important. And the definition of success is not just based on financial performance. There are a number of other capitals that need to be taken into account. For example, natural capital and social capital. So we need to also rewrite some of the management textbooks, and perhaps we all have to go back to school and learn what needs to be done at business level in order to meet this Vision 2050.
Interesting. Roberto, when we look at the SDGs, how do we connect them to business, and how do we make individuals and corporations understand this? Do you think there's a disconnect?
The SDGs are an excellent framework, and I think a lot of work has been done all over the world by a number of different entities to create awareness, and I think this has been achieved. So there is a good level of awareness about SDGs everywhere, from at government level, for example, at business level. The problem right now is to make the SDGs actionable, so to move from theory to action, because time is of essence, and it's time to transform, as I said before. So we need to provide business with real tools and pathways to take action, And I believe that we at BCSD Malaysia, obviously, with the help and the affiliation with the World Business Council, we are in a good position to provide that level of support. Another important issue that I want to mention is related to how the nature of risk has changed in the recent years. If we look at the World Economic Forum report on global risk, for example, they publish this report every year. I think the last one was published a week ago, or anyway, very recently. The most important risks highlighted in this report are sustainability-related risks. And we're talking about extreme weather events, climate action failure, human environmental damage, biodiversity loss. So companies need to understand that it's not a nice thing to do, to talk about sustainability. It's a necessity. It's a necessity because these are the most prevalent risks that they are facing now, not 10 years from now, now. So integrating ESG risks and opportunities into enterprise governance, okay, and into the enterprise risk management from the board down is really, really essential. And we're talking about integrating risks and opportunities. And I really want to stress the word opportunities. Sustainability is not just about adding additional cost to the P&L, okay? There is hard evidence right now that more sustainable companies have a better financial performance, for example. You know, a couple of years back, this was not proven. Now, this is proven. Companies that integrate sustainability into their strategy are able to take advantage of new opportunities. They innovate. They create competitive advantage. They come up with new business models. They serve new customers. They launch new products or new services. They explore new distribution channels. They use new marketing approaches. Yeah?
Okay. Thanks, Roberto. Can you just stay on the line for us a couple of minutes? We've got a couple more questions that we'd like to ask you. And I think one of them is about whether or not, you know, larger corporations really understand sustainability and what that means. We'll come back with that, though, in a few moments. Folks, if you'd like to get in touch with us, get us via WhatsApp 018-789-8899, Twitter or Instagram. Of course, we are at BFM Radio. We're on the phone with Roberto Benatello. He's the Executive Director at the Business Council for Sustainable Development of Malaysia. And we're talking with him because an organization's environmental, social and governance practices provide a vital metric for where investors should park their funds, according to RHB Research. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back here in just a few moments on Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Stay tuned to Enterprise Biz Bytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Become fabulous millionaires. BFM 89.9.
Enterprise Biz Bytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Christine Wong.
We've been hearing from Roberto Benatello. He's the Executive Director at the Business Council for Sustainable Development here in Malaysia. We've got him on the line. But if you're only just joining us, folks, we're talking about how an organization's environmental, social and governance practices provide a vital metric for where investors should park their funds. This is according to RHB Research. So how are Malaysian businesses approaching sustainability, and how does this affect their bottom line? Thanks for staying on the phone with us, Roberto. Chris, do you want to pick up?
Yes. So, Roberto, would you say that the larger corporations understand sustainability? What would drive companies' suitability performance? And are corporates in Malaysia moving fast enough and doing the right things?
Let's start by looking at the drivers of sustainability. So, for example, let me just list a few. Employees want to work for companies that are sustainable, companies that have a license to operate, companies that have a purpose. So in order to attract good human capital, it's important that you are perceived to be a sustainable company. So that is another driver. Sustainable companies are also better in attracting clients and creating customer loyalty. And there are new segments of customers, of consumers out there that are very, very sensitive to sustainability-related matters. So, customers also constitute a big driver. And then there are regulators, you know, sustainability regulations from governments, regulators, and other policymakers are becoming more and more and more, and they need to be followed. So that's another big driver. And then there are NGOs, and then there are communities that they push and they apply pressure. So, and this pressure sometimes for some companies is extremely important because it might really drive consumption and purchase patterns in markets, in also in export markets. So, but I would say that the biggest driver, in my point of view, are the investors. Okay, right now investors are looking to channel their money to companies with good ESG performance, and right now there is a quite a high demand for green investments, green projects, and the demand is higher than the supply. So the investors, you know, financial institutions, banks, they're looking for, you know, projects, they're looking for companies with a good ESG performance. The problem is that they want to be sure that the ESG performance is good. And the first thing they look at is the sustainability report or the integrated report. But they want to find in the report reliable information. So, and sometimes they find it very difficult because the reporting landscape up to now has been a little bit of a zoo, a lot of different standards and a lot of different metrics. And, you know, sometimes very messy situations, very difficult for people to compare apples with apples. So what's happening at world level is that there is a consolidation of sustainability reporting standards. And in my point of view, this is a good thing. Companies will be forced to use global standards. They will have to report using the same metrics, and they will have to demonstrate the reliability and the consistency of the data that they report. So what does this mean in practice? It means that for companies, it will become harder and harder to engage in greenwashing, for example, to make big claims, big statements, without following through with action, you know, with hard evidence. And let's talk about what I observe in Malaysia. What I observe is that a lot of companies are making, you know, big steps, and I really commend those companies. But there is still, you know, quite a big number of companies that are waiting to see what others, for example, the competitors are doing, and they're waiting for other companies to make the first move because they are unwilling to be the leader. This is one thing that definitely is happening. Another thing that I observe is that there is a unwillingness to work with others, you know, and this comes probably from a wrong understanding of sustainability. Sustainability is not CSR, is not a CSR activity that a company does internally. Sustainability is about transforming systems. And in order to transform systems, you need a company need to work with many other different parties, even competitors sometimes, to make things happen at a large scale. Another thing that I observe in Malaysia is that there is a lack of skills and competency when it comes to sustainability. And this obviously needs to be improved at all levels, from the board down, and hopefully we will be able to help and assist in that effort.
Okay. So what about SMEs then? If they don't understand the importance of sustainability, can you paint a picture or a scenario how this will impact their business in the supply chain? What are the opportunities for them?
Well, let me start by mentioning that the impact of large multinationals and governments in fighting the big sustainability challenges is enormous, especially in comparison to what SMEs can do. Large corporations, they control regional and global supply chains. SMEs are part of those supply chains. So we need to mention that the sustainability-related demands from large multinational companies, large companies to those SMEs will increase in the coming years. So taking into account, for example, issues like product traceability, compliance to human rights standards, environmental standards, and others. Some large multinationals in high carbon intensive sectors, for example, will have to transform, you know, really go through some radical transformations. And this is likely to create a ripple effect to the supply chain partners. SMEs need to understand the dynamics of this changing landscape and use this as an opportunity to get ready. And if they can, when they can, create a competitive advantage. I do not think, honestly, that this process is going to be painless because I do not see at the moment a support system in place for SMEs. Apart from these supply chain considerations, SMEs can play a big role as innovators by inventing new products, for example, services and business models, or by using new technologies to tackle SDG-related business opportunities. So business opportunities that are related to the sustainability challenges that we will be facing. There are great opportunities, for example, in the circular economy space. Consider food loss and waste in the food and agriculture value chains. There are massive opportunities there for improvement, therefore massive business opportunities, or in the automotive, appliances, or electronic sectors for, again, circular economy practices. There are opportunities in resource recovery. Think about, for example, all the lithium-ion batteries that we're going to have from electric vehicles in the renewable energy space, or in the energy efficiency space for buildings. Think about, for example, EV charging infrastructure in different settings. Okay, so there will be a lot of opportunities for SMEs to set up these charging infrastructures, for example, in private condos and similar settings. Think about, for example, sustainable aquaculture or precision agricultures. And this is just to name a few. So SMEs will be able to grasp these opportunities if they develop an understanding of how the sector in which they currently operate will be affected by the sustainability transformations. It is going to be important to see how they are willing to adapt, willing and able to adapt. And in certain cases, I'm sure that some of them will have to reinvent themselves.
All right. And finally, could you give us a couple of examples of how BCSD Malaysia is supporting businesses here in Malaysia?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Let me give you a couple of examples. We have created a platform to inform, to educate companies on the ethics and especially on the business risks related to human rights and environmental violations. This platform provides a very practical support to the business community, Malaysia business community in general, but especially to large Malaysian manufacturers. And I'm sure we have helped them to understand and prevent some of the issues, especially issues that some of them have been facing over the last couple of years. Another example is with a project that we've set up with some companies in the healthcare sector. And it's an extended producer responsibility scheme called EPR scheme. And through this scheme, we basically take back some single-use plastic products from patients' homes. These are patients that undergo home dialysis. And normally, these plastic bags, they end up into landfill. So we're very proud of this project because we're proving a concept, and hopefully we'll be able to replicate the same in other settings. So basically, the plastic that we take back is processed, and then it is transformed into secondary raw material then that can be utilized to make other products, other new products. So very, very important. Another one, we have created a partnership with the Malaysian Institute of Accountants, and we've created a series of sustainability and ESG courses for specifically tailored for accountants and financial professionals. And we've already started delivering these courses. Another one, we partnered with the largest waste management company in Malaysia and also with a company in the Netherlands called Circo to bring into Malaysia a training program to train companies on how to introduce circular economy design concepts and circular economy business models, especially tailored to what's happening in their companies, in their organization. So it's a very, very specific program. This methodology has already been delivered to over, if I remember correctly, 1,200 companies around the world. And we can prove, because they actually, Circo made an impact study that this courses, these 1,200 people trained, have created positive input. So we're really hoping to do the same, to replicate the same here in Malaysia. We've also partnered with another German company. They are a prominent provider of professional education. And we're bringing to Malaysia a program on sustainability leadership. Yeah, this is this targets senior managers and C-suite. Just to give you an idea, also last year we organized quite a big number of events, one a month, on relevant sustainability topics, and with top experts both from Malaysia and also from around the world. We are growing. So that's a good thing. And we are currently hiring new people. And hopefully we will be able to be even more impactful in the future. So, yeah, that's the situation right now.
That's great. Thank you very much. That was Roberto Benatello, the Executive Director at the Business Council for Sustainable Development of Malaysia. He was with us on the line all the way through the show. If you did miss any part of this show, we have been speaking about an organization's environmental, social and governance practices provide a vital metric for where investors should park their funds. And this is according to RHB Research. I want to thank Roberto for joining us all the way through the show, and of course for Christine Wong for being here with me today, keeping me company. If you missed any part of the show, don't forget you can download and listen back to the podcast wherever you normally listen to it from. We recommend the BFM app. It's available in the Apple App Store or Google Play, so check it out right there on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Enterprise BizBytes was presented by Allianz Malaysia, empowering businesses to build confidence in tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.